The state committee only has a big convention in Sacramento once a year. Then the executive committee meets every other month all over the state. Mm-hmm. And that's a man and a woman from each congressional district. Mm-hmm. So it isn't much, unless your own district is active. Now, this district is very active here. Mm-hmm. But unless your own district is active, you don't get much out of it, only the convention. Mm-hmm. I know I heard a lot of them say they paid the $50 just to go up there and say, here. Because that's about all they did. But the executive committee is where everything is decided. Their last sentence before they adjourn was that they vote all the powers of the executive committee till the next convention.
So when you first got on the state committee, did you notice that the executive committee was sort of where things were happening? And then did you just want to be a part of that, or
I just wanted to be a part of it. So Louis Warshaw, who's Carmen Warshaw's husband, I had him appointed, or I worked awfully hard for him to be my co-chairman in my district when I was the woman's chairman. For a long, long, they lived in Arcadia then.
Mm-hmm. This is back in the Alhambra district.
Yes, he lived in the Alhambra district in Arcadia. And he was awfully nice to work with because he furnished the money.
For both divisions? Did he furnish money for you?
For our state committee. No, well, it was just the whole committee. I didn't mm-hmm. have much to do with just that was an extra thing. Mm-hmm. The women's division, mm-hmm. but the regular state committee, we had some awfully nice affairs in our district. Big shots come out there that Louis and I put on together. And
so mainly the two of you would work as the district co-chair.
Yes.
And you would work getting people into bringing the speakers out and
we usually were notified if they wanted to come out there from the head office, and then we got a big affair for them. And
did you do fundraising, or did you?
Yeah, we tried to do fundraising, but we were awful poor at it. the Democrats never did raise much funds. That's one of the things that the console movement did mm-hmm. that was awfully good, because the party, we didn't have political parties. We had the state government was run through lobbies. Mm-hmm. And in a way, a young fellow would run, and maybe he'd be a Democrat and get elected. Well, the Democrats never gave him a cent to be elected. The lobbyists gave him all the money. Well, he wasn't beholden to the Democrats. He was beholden to the lobbyists. And all through Warren's governorship and Goody Knight's governorship, anybody wanted anything to pass in the legislature, they went to the lobbyists. Mm-hmm. And that's where I had such differences with Jess Unruh, because he would go to them, or they'd come to him, and he'd say, "You give me the money. I know who's got a chance to get elected, and I'll choose the ones that can run and to help them." And so he funneled the money
from the lobbyists.
From the lobbyists to the different. Of course, he would give one or two big fundraisers a year, but maybe that was the most efficient way. But it made the people in the districts awfully mad if they wanted to back somebody and have somebody that they hardly knew or come up, "Well, Jess Unruh's picked me to run, and I'm going to run." And it caused an awful lot of dissension, but you just can't buck money.
Does that give the incumbents then, do they end up having the power in the party?
Yes, the incumbents. So the incumbent, of course, Californians have incumbentitis, and they have a 25% advantage or more. People just vote automatically for name identification incumbents, so they know what they do or not. But Jesse started in, the console movement raised enough money that every Democrat got, there was a letter sent to every registered Democrat with the Democratic slate on it. And they really, of course, it was a combination of the state committee, the county committees, and the club presidents, or the clubs that could send delegates according to their number. And the console movement really elected put the Democrats on the map in this state. They elected the slate in 58, they completely, and we had the biggest conventions in Fresno where every presidential candidate came to talk, and they really made the Democrats a very interesting thing to work for. You just loved it when that council movement was getting started.
And that started...
it started statewide in 52 with Cranston.
Okay, and from what I understand, Richard Richards also had
a lot to do. Oh, he had a big to do with it, yes. He had a big to do with it. And Helen Myers was from our district, and Richards, and they worked awfully. Don Rose, they worked awfully hard in the council in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a flourishing organization. Well, and it's just a shame that it lost favor, but it was... So many young people, or people that with the left-wing views, they weren't, they're commonplace, but then they were ahead of their time,
mm-hmm.
and they would pass, they'd stay open all night, and most of the people, our old ladies, said, we had the biggest delegation, because our club was very flourishing, and we had the biggest delegation in our district. Every club in it sent delegates, but they'd get so tired, they'd go. Then they'd put through all these resolutions that it got so that the people that were running for office would repudiate them. And the people in office repudiated them because they were just too left-wing for the times. And it put the council in a bad, just too bad they couldn't stay more pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
But they said that's what it was for ideas, and you couldn't stop them from having ideas. And of course, they proven right, but it's just too bad to be so ahead of your time, because those people always suffer for it.
Okay. I want to talk to you more about CDC, but before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit just about the campaigns that you're in before the CDC really got started, because then maybe we can get some ideas, or people researching can get some ideas about the differences between when you had to campaign and organize Democrats without CDC or without the Central Committee. And I was, especially when you were very active in Helen DeHagen Douglas's.
Yes, I worked awfully hard for Helen.
Now,
but Helen put on an individual campaign. It was her own friends that really, like, I had a day for Helen in my district, and I picked her up early in the morning at her home and outpost, and we had a breakfast in South Pasadena,
mm-hmm.
and another two house meetings in the morning, then a luncheon and two house meetings in different homes, and a luncheon in San Marino, and a fair in Pomona, then a great big rally that night in El Monte.
Mm-hmm.
We just, I don't know how she ever stood it.
So you met her when she was on the state committee?
When she worked in the women's division.
And were you on the executive committee by now?
I was most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And what part of the executive committee, were you just one of the delegates who was a member of it, or did you have an...
Well, that wasn't because, it was just because she knew me.
Mm-hmm.
But then when, after Helen was... nominated, I got a great big headquarters in Alhambra. This all done on sort of an individual basis, Democratic headquarters. Then I worked in, she called me up and told me to go into the Roslyn Hotel and pick out some rooms, some headquarters for her. And the manager just wanted to give me two rooms, bedrooms. And I said, well, no, that won't do. And I chose two great big enormous rooms off the mezzanine, and she had somebody from Chicago pay for them.
So you just got a call from her. You would start out working for her in Alhambra,
yes.
in a district headquarters for,
yes.
Douglas.
Yes, I had the one going in Alhambra all the time, but I had Zeta Higbee manage it.
Mm-hmm.
But I went every day into L.A., and my sister was living with me to take care of the kids, and I went every day into the Roslyn Hotel.
So
I was her headquarters manager.
And she personally, though, asked you to do that.
Yes,
and
yes.
So
uh-huh.
How many other people were working in that office?
Oh, she had She had the press. She had quite a few. One man handled the press, and Ed Liebeck and Ruth Liebeck were both in the camp. Have you heard of them in here? Oh, they were such wonderful people. They were longtime friends of Helen's, and they worked in the campaign. And then we had a lot of volunteers, but I think she had about 5 or 6 paid people.
Mm-hmm. And you were one of the paid people?
Yes.
Were you paid just out of whatever was raised there?
I think I got $55 a week.
$55 a week.
Which was so unusual because the only time I'd ever gotten paid.
Did she pay you? Or?
Well, the campaign. She had a accountant that wrote out all the checks, mm-hmm. and it was a Douglas for Senate campaign. You know, she didn't pay me personally, but mm-hmm. she had a camp. But I had I didn't have much to do with the fundraising. Mm-hmm. She had to, nice.
What was your function?
Well, I just had to run the whole headquarters and to get out the mail and to get out the bulletins. She had a weekly newsletter, and she had, I gave Roz Weiner, that was on the L.A. City Council for years, the first woman elected. Well, Roz was going to USC, and she and her mother came up to want to volunteer for Helen, and she was a cute little girl, and I knew that they were Jewish because you couldn't help tell a mother was both Jewish, and she had all kinds of stuff, literature that she'd already had on Helen, and she was so enamored with her. Well, I just put them to work, stuff in envelopes, but I had a call from some little club that wanted a speaker, and I said, "Yours seems so well versed on Helen, I wonder if you'd go out and speak." And she says, "Oh, I couldn't do that." And I gave her a lot of stuff about her bills that she'd had and this and the house and when she was a congresswoman then. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Reiner says, "After all the money I spent on you, you can't even go talk." She says, "That's terrible."
Mrs. Reiner spent money.
Yeah, well, I guess she was taking public speaking at U.S. So anyway, she went and spoke for Helen that afternoon, and she was just tickled to death. And I got an awfully wonderful, Dr. Frank Sullivan, I had to establish a Speakers Bureau, and I got him from Loyola University on the Speakers Bureau, and we had quite a clash out there because he worked so hard for Helen, and the Cardinal was very much against her. He was very much for
You tell me the story
Richard
of that
Nixon.
When you had to
but
go poor, in and
but
confront poor, him.
But Sullivan really worked hard. He tried to make Sullivan lose his job out there. But that's another story.
So
Manchester Bodie was really, there was another person running for Senate. No, he was running for lieutenant.
Now Downey resigned his seat.
Yeah, Downey, she was running really against, was she running against Downey?
She announced her candidacy in about 49, and Downey didn't announce his.
Yeah, I don't think he was running again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said he wouldn't run.
No, he wasn't running again. But it was sort of brave, you know, for her to announce her candidacy when we had an incumbent senator. Mm-hmm. But this McAteer from San Francisco was running for a statewide office. It was either lieutenant governor or something, and we had a big affair in Alhambra, a big breakfast in San Marino for all the statewide candidates, and Manchester Bodie that was running for her job he was running for state senator, for United States senator.
Yeah, he ran against her.
Against Helen, and this McAteer wanted Bodie's endorsement with the Daily News so badly, and when he came to this breakfast, Helen came. Oh, I've got more pictures. I'll find all those pictures sometime. I got more pictures of that breakfast with Helen and all these big shots. Well, one of the attorneys from Alhambra got up and asked him. He said, "Are you endorsing Bodie or Helen for senator?" And of course, he didn't want to say because he wanted the Daily News endorsement. Mm-hmm. And so I got right up and said, I said, he's for nobody but Helen. And then I called on somebody else because I didn't want to put on the spot because I know he'd have to say he was for, he didn't give a darn who was elected. He was from Northern California, but I'm sure he was for Bodie.
So,
I got such a kick out of one, I went to one affair where Bodie was talking, and somebody asked him why he was running for senator, and he said, well, this committee of Democrats got together and looked up a whole lot of people, and he said, I was the only one they could find that didn't have anything, hadn't been in jail or hadn't been indicted for something. I don't know, he went on, and I thought, so he said, they persuaded me to run. I thought that was awfully funny. Oh, I'm sure he did. He had the backing of the, all the Pauli and the ins of the party. Mm-hmm. Roosevelt and Helen were interlopers, according to... Okay. Poor old... I guess Roosevelt had to run against Warren, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And he sure did get flicked. I don't know why on earth that Warren was so popular all those years when the whole I think he was a very honest man, and but the whole legislature was just run by lobbyists. The most crooked things passed, and I got a kick out of something that when. That was before reapportionment, and the Pasadena district was so small, Hinshaw was their congressman, and then our district, they was so big, and so that I thought Warren should veto this plan that they put up, and so I wrote him a real mean letter and said that I didn't appreciate it when... I was worth just one-fourth as much. My vote was worth just one-fourth of what it would be if I lived across the street in Pasadena mm-hmm. because of the way it was districted, and it really wasn't right. And, you know, I got his book out, his memoirs, and when that is the, one of the things that he has been the worst, criticized for was this one vote, one man, one vote thing. He figures that's the greatest thing he did. But he said in here that he made a completely political decision because L.A. County was about the only one that was unhappy with the districting. And well, it was on the one senator deal per county. And he said that he was making amends for his complete... political decision in the, when he was governor, that he saw how awful it was all over the United States, how people were so disfranchised. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was really, he did some wonderful things on that Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. He really, and that was just an absolute fluke how he happened to be appointed. It was just really, really, and he did made some wonderful decisions. That I don't think it'll, I think Berger's court's wearing a few of them down, but it'll take 100 years to get them, get rid of them all. I can't understand how he was so good when he was such a lackadaisical governor, although I think he was honest, which Goody Knight wasn't.
Mm-hmm. When you were, you mentioned in your list of things that you were the district manager for Jimmy Roosevelt when he was running against I guess it must have been Warren.
Yes, he was. Yeah, Warren went to the Supreme Court in 1953.
Right.
And he was elected in 1950. But
so you started out that year as district manager for both. Was it just a Democratic district headquarters that
yeah,
you ran
we had
both?
The district headquarters. All of them
for
were
both,
in our district.
For
but
both Helen and for
and,
Roosevelt.
But Jimmy's, most of his campaign was made from... big bus, and he just went from district to district in the big bus. I rode with him several days.
You did?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But it was just lots of fun. But he campaigned so hard, but he wasn't half as smart as Helen.
So you did, you worked for both of them at the same time? Is that kind of tiring?
Oh, I worked from, I just from early morning till late at night. That's all I did. Mm-hmm. Was in politics. And I'd be working all day in L.A. and come home and work in the headquarters at night till midnight.
Not much of your family.
I didn't see much of my family. I had them, I had one of the kids there on us. I'd bring it, I think Joe was pretty little then. But I'd put him to sleep at the headquarters and take him home.
So that's 1950, and then this is still before there's much CDC movement going on.
Yeah, well, it wasn't only in our own district was the CDC. It wasn't statewide or any other district at all.
And then in 52, though, you're living in Long Beach?
Yes.
Then? Okay, and did you move to Long Beach because of Lou's job?
Yes.
Or just him?
Yes, he was working for the, he got a job here with the Board of Education. Mm-hmm. They were having quite a building program here then. Mm-hmm. So he commuted for a while, and he just wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Just wouldn't commute, because, you know, he had to go up, and there was no freeways. He had to go up Atlantic at the busiest time, and he just refused. So he just come down here and got an apartment, because it took me 6 months to move. Oh, I hated to move. Oh, I just thought it was the awfulest thing on earth.
Is that because of all this?
Well,
by now you've got all your work in the community.
Yes, and yeah. I'm an awful stick in the mud anyway, I guess. I just don't like change. And then,
well, you've done a lot of moving around before.
Oh, I did, time. But after we bought our old house in Alhambra, I said I was there for life. Because we had moved all the time when it was with the state highway, but after the kids were in school, Joe was going to Cantwell, and it was just about halfway between here, and he insisted on Joe coming down with him, and then he thought that would bring me down. So I finally came.
So before, you're still working in Alhambra, and he got an apartment
down here,
and
yeah.
Then you still...
And Joe came down with him, and so...
But you, up to this time, you said you were still staying in Alhambra.
Yeah. But then we found a big... I first lived at, when I first come down here, at First and Alameda, so those... Mangan Apartments. We lived on the third floor there. And then I got a big old house, the downstairs on 1049 East Ocean. And oh, how I loved the landlady. She lived upstairs. And I wish to goodness she wanted me to buy that place. But there's a great big apartment there now. But I just loved it there. Mm-hmm. Oh,
You're right on me.
But there,
right on the ocean.
Yeah, right across 1049 East Ocean, and we bought this place. I bought it in auction. I had to bid on it in a court. Well, Lou wanted to go to Lakewood and buy a house. I said, heck no. We had a house and we raised our kids. If I moved to Long Beach, it's just the ocean. So I got to buy a place from Broadway to the ocean. That's the only place I'd look.
So how old were your kids?
Well, Joe was in first year high school,
mm-hmm.
and when we moved down here,
mm-hmm.
and Noel had just graduated from high school,
mm-hmm.
and Edgar was married.
So you just had.
I just had
one at home.
Well, Noel was he was night manager. Remember the clock restaurants around here?
Is this the Henry? Was that owned by Henry?
No, it was a whole chain of them all over. Oh. I don't know whether Big Boys took them over or somebody did, but anyway, there was he was night manager of a clock out at Old Maywood or somewhere, which was about halfway, so he came down here too. So we got this big old place. We got the downstairs of it. Then we bought this place,
mm-hmm.
and Noel and Joe both were here.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was in San Francisco for 3 years, and Las Vegas one, and then otherwise here.
But so in 52, that's when Stevenson's campaign began.
Oh, I was on the executive committee then, so I worked awfully hard for
and you
Stevenson.
Did you stay on the executive committee even though you were moving? That didn't.
Well, I was living here then.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So living in this congressional district.
Oh, you were on the county committee.
Yes, and I got off the county committee.
And then got on the state committee. And then you became part of the executive committee
yes,
again.
Yes, down here. Mm-hmm. And Stevenson ran twice. Then I was so anxious for him to run the third time.
So you were working for Kinnick and for Stevenson in 52?
And I sure was.
Around, this is about the time then that the club movement gets started.
Yes. Okay.
And did you go to Asilomar or?
Yes.
So you were there
uh-huh.
for the first
uh-huh.
the first meeting.
And we had a very active council here in Long Beach with, we had the Bayshore Club. I think I told you that there were more PhDs belong to that club, that it was nearly all teachers, mm-hmm. and I helped organize it. But they were just for Stevenson. Mm-hmm. But they were awfully good workers. And I had about 30 people here one night, and we made 3 by 5 cards for every Democrat in the district. And we, because then the precinct lists were alphabetical, mm-hmm. and I had all the precinct lists, and it was so hard, you had to take them out and then put them up and down the street in order to really call on anybody. Mm-hmm. And we bought little metal cases for the, which was very awkward. We should have made them type them after we got them, and it'd been much easier. But everybody had a little, these teachers, they all got out and worked their precinct.
These teachers from Cal State Long Beach?
From City College and Cal State. Mm-hmm. And oh, they worked hard in that campaign. Mm-hmm. They were really just awfully glad to do it. They just seemed to be so enamored of Stevenson. Mm-hmm. But we never saw much of them afterwards. After the two campaigns, they kept that club together till, was it 52 and 56?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in 52...
No, it must have been 54... No, 52, 56.
And then
because it was
60. Was going to
yeah.
Again, and then somebody
yeah.
got the nomination.
Yeah.
So in 52, you went up to this original meeting of the meeting that
yes.
the What's Wrong.
And Cranston was the chairman, and he called it.
Mm-hmm.
And he really did an awfully good organizational job. And we had re-elected... for our whole council movement here, chairman, and we elected two chairmen. We had two assembly district councils,
mm-hmm.
but we soon got rid of them because they were too, it was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it was organized that way in the beginning, and we had good chairmen of them. Mr. Crocker, who was lived up the street here, and Sam Peters was chairman. He was... He was teacher at state, mm-hmm. I mean at City College, and so was his wife.
Did people get involved through that?
I think so.
Wouldn't have been involved
I think
otherwise?
So. I think they really did.
Mm-hmm.
And the men sort of formed a Long Beach Democratic Club, and all those profs went to a luncheon meeting. And they got cooled off because one of them had the idea that they wanted to run for assembly or Senate here. They wanted to run for office. And it was just announced that Kinnick was going to run. And that Kinnick, one of them was the president. I'll have to go back and think who it was the president of this club. And they just asked him to resign and make Kinnick the president so he'd get more publicity. And he never came back.
Hmm.
He resigned,
he
never came back.
He was a professor
uh-huh.
at one of the colleges.
Uh-huh. Because that was a rotten way to act about it. But those that were sort of the old Pauls just figured that Kinnick is the only one that could possibly be elected, and he was it, which isn't really the Democratic way to do things.
So you, you had something to do with Kennedy running, but you're up at the state convention.
Yeah. Then when he always had this Johnny Johnston, the paid political man, to run his campaign. But we had a great big party, our Democratic Study Club, and they went around and got the names of everybody there that would sign up for Kinnick, and everybody signed. And so that was the beginning of their campaign. They signed their name and address and phone number. Well, this guy had a good gimmick, this Johnston. Kinnick got an office, and they wrote to, this is when he was running for the assembly, because he couldn't